Christian Parenting.
This is Be Love, Do Good Podcast, and I'm your host, Christy Hayes, mama to two, founder of Be Strong Story, and author of the children's book, The Lunchbox Note, a true story of how a lunchbox note that said, be strong, protect the weak, love everyone, changed our life, and created a mission for our family. Join us each week for conversations that inspire our families to live out true compassion, kindness, and what it looks like to be love and do good in our communities. It may take us out of our comfort zones, you guys, but I promise it will put us on a path to see others, love others, and quite possibly change the world. Today, I have the dynamo, Toni Collier, on today. She's a speaker, she's an author, she's a mama. She is the founder of this incredible organization called Broken Crayon Still Color. And today, we really talk about her journey through brokenness. And for anyone who is experiencing the depths of brokenness right now, or one day, I know that you will probably experience a broken time. You're going to want to hear from Toni because she takes us through her journey, and it's incredible, and it gives us so much encouragement and so much hope. And she is just for women. She's for telling you that you will get through it, that God will get you through it. And no matter where you are and what you feel right now, that God can restore and redeem and rescue anything. So please enjoy my conversation with Toni Collier. Hey, Toni, thanks for being on the Be Love, Do Good podcast today. I already adore you because you're bubbly like me, and everyone's going to get this like explosion of bubbly. So if you are not a bubbly person, just turn down the volume a little bit and then turn down, like I always say, I talk so fast, and just turn down that speed, you know, a little bit too. But it's going to be great. Thanks for being with us.
Yay. I'm so excited to be here. And I'm so excited that you prefaced that we're both a little bubbly so that people can be prepared.
Yes, yes.
A lot of energy right now.
I have a guy that I love having on. He's like a leadership guru. I've had him on twice, and he's from England. And he always laughs at me because I'm like, I love England. I thought the people were kind of, you know, we're not going to be okay with my bubble. And he was like, we love your bubble for like a day. He was like, but then we're okay if you go. If you go back. So I always preface that. Okay, so tell us, Toni, what you are kind of doing right now. We're kind of joking that you're like in the middle of a move. You don't have any furniture. Like, what does life look like for you right now?
Well, I am sitting in my daughter's halfway empty bedroom right now, okay? There is a headboard and no frame, okay? That's where I'm at, okay? That's what I'm feeling like. So we're in the middle of transition. But there are some consistent things that are a part of our life. I get to serve alongside my husband as he leads our church, Hillsong Atlanta. I get to lead a women's ministry that helps women process through brokenness and get on the other side to hope. So that's like consistent right now. And we raise our daughter and help her process through some of the challenges that she's had in school with behavior and diagnosis and all the things. And then we got a little bump on the way. That's not going well. Okay. It is consistently growing. Okay. We have a son coming soon, and we're so excited. Just saying that's kind of crazy, but so that's our lives. That's what we're doing.
That's so, I love, so we have a boy and a girl as well, but the boy is the oldest. And I'm telling you, I mean, I love my little girl to pieces, but that boy, he's 13. And do you want to know what his favorite thing is cuddling with mom while we watch football. Yeah. Like entire Sunday is literally the AFC championship is on the TV for 4 hours, because I know that I will have a consistent 4 hours that he will literally tuck in beside me and won't move. And it's glorious. So you're going to love that little boy.
I want that. My daughter, since she was a small, tiny baby, she would like point to her crib, like put me down.
Oh,
okay.
Same.
Not trying to be here with you.
Okay? Right. Right. That's my little girl. She's Miss Independent. She's like, I mean, I think I'll cuddle with you today, but actually maybe not.
No. I'm sweating. I'm like, okay. Right. Got it. Got it.
Right. That boy you're going to love. So tell me a little bit and tell our listeners just kind of your journey into momhood, because you kind of have two kind of different journeys. You had a child a while ago, and now you're kind of having this newborn again. Tell us what that looked like for you.
Yeah, I would definitely say our family has a lot of dynamics. Okay. So yeah, I had my daughter 7.5 years ago. At the time, I was in a really toxic marriage, very verbally abusive. We were in poverty. I mean, it was a super hard season for us. And then, transitioned out for my daughter and I's safety and thought I was going to be single mom in it forever. And lo and behold, God sends this man and he redeems love for me and intimacy for me. And we get married. We've been married now for 5 years. And now it's interesting because we've got our own little bundle of joy on the way. And so we've been this blended family for so long. And a lot of I really kind of feel like the Lord is kind of like, I don't know, like giving our family kind of like this glue in a sense of words, because we are a blended family. My daughter's dad's very involved. And so there has been this back and forth. There's a little bit of co-parenting here. There's some weeks on, some weeks off. And so it's been a very inconsistent family dynamic, but beautiful nonetheless. And now we start thinking, we're like, wow, this kid is going to be here all the time. Like this is going to be a different
Right.
parenting journey than what we've actually had. And we've had so many challenges with Dylan. From getting diagnosed with sensory processing, ADHD, ODD, to recently a general anxiety diagnosis. And yeah, that's been interesting and that's been, tough, but we just do it, Like you kind of look from the outside in and people say, wow, that's a lot to manage. But God graces you for the life that He's built for you. And so yeah, we've just been kind of doing it. We've just been doing it, but it's been wild. Okay.
I love it. Okay, so take me back a little bit to that journey because I think sometimes when we're on the other side,
Yeah.
It's so easy to kind of see that you came through that. You came through the pain and the heart and that feeling you just said, like I thought I would be single momming it forever. Kind of take me back to that and what that felt like and where kind of God met you in those times when you literally felt like you were going to be at in this space of either being alone or just the hard. What was that like?
That's really good. I get to work now with a lot of women who experience divorce and even abuse in so many different ways. And when you come down to the really difficult decision to transition out of a marriage for whatever reason, I mean, if even if it is for safety, it's still a very scary, but also very it's a landing pad, for lack of better words. And for us, it just was more safe, more peaceful, healthier for us to transition out. And so at first, it's a very interesting type of relief. You're hurting, obviously. You're trying to seek counseling to figure out what pieces you need to rebuild. But for the moment, it kind of feels like, wow, we're safe. Wow, there's peace. Wow, there isn't arguments. Wow, we're not afraid. Wow, we actually have food that we want to eat, and et cetera, et cetera. And so it kind of felt like a sense of relief at first, and then it kind of hit, And those are some of the things that we don't talk about, the dynamic of getting out of a really hard situation and feeling that relief, and then getting to the point where you start to leak mentally and emotionally. I know for me, I thought, okay, I'm going to transition out. I'm going to single mom this thing. I'm going to try my best to get a job. I had to move in with a friend and her daughter, and that was very difficult. They had a very different lifestyle from us, and so that was super hard. And then had to rebuild everything. Got an apartment. Ended up having to get a roommate because I couldn't afford to pay for it myself. I slept on a couch. My daughter had a room, and my roommate had a room, and I didn't. And I slept on a black leather IKEA couch. And I'm saying leather, but it's really pleather because it's fake.
Right.
Those are the things. I mean, you're right. Even as I say this, I'm like, wow, I don't actually think I've ever said that publicly, that I slept on a couch with my daughter in our own apartment so that she can be comfortable and we can afford it. And then it was a treacherous and painful and not linear journey of healing. And the hardest thing I think I've ever had to do was to raise my child while trying to heal my wounds. Yeah, to this day, the hardest thing that I've ever done, and I'm still doing. We haven't arrived, but I was really committed. I think I didn't have a lot of self-worth. I was very insecure, and so my healing journey, I really honestly think, started because I wanted to be a healthy mom, and then yeah, we transitioned into counseling. Surprise. Yep.
I appreciate you sharing that part of it because I think even as a lot of people know, just we've kind of gone through some grief the last couple of years. It yeah. is that feeling of the other side that the person who's in it doesn't feel like they'll ever get there. So oh. you hear the other side stories and people who have gone through it, it's like you kind of forget the really hard because you're through it and you like, thank God I'm through that. I don't like want to talk about that. I don't want to like go through that. I want to just yep. talk about the joy and the healing that I am. But I think yep. sometimes people who are really in the depths of like the mm-hmm. sadness and whatever, even for me, I would look at someone and go, oh, they've gone to the other side. Good for them. Yep. But it's never going to happen for me. Like I'm just, it's
oh, yeah.
not me. Good job. It wasn't even like inspiring. Like I wasn't right. I wasn't like, oh, I'll get there too. It was like, hey, good job for you, but that's not my journey. And so yep. thanks. And it is obviously because you always come out of it. But I think sharing that piece
yeah.
of the hard inside is huge. And I want you to kind of, and cause I want to hear your advice for me when you said I was in the midst of healing myself while I was parenting, can you even remember what that was like? Like how you, did you compartmentalize that? Were you like, okay, I'm going to heal here and not show this sadness to my kid and I'm going to try to bomb, you know, cause I think we have all these places that we think we have to be for others and who we have to yeah. be. What was that like for you?
It was not pretty. I'm going to just say that right now. It wasn't no type of compartmentalizing, maybe a little bit, but the truth is when you get to a certain point of toxicity and emotional weightiness, if you will, you just leak, you know, you just do, you take you with you. It's not like I'm going to hop out of, you know, having a really hard marriage and being under a lot of stress as a wife and just not be a stress-filled mom. It doesn't really work. Like we don't kind of pick and choose, you know? And so it was very difficult. I remember being so hard on my daughter at 1 and 2 years old, wanting to be so structured because at that point there was not a lot of control. I wasn't in my own space. I was living with another single mom. I'm like, are you paying the bills? Why are the lights being turned off? What's going on? I was just in a mode of complete trauma and scarcity. And so the only thing I really could control was my daughter. And so I really do feel like those early days, I was so hard on her. This time we do this, this time we do that. You have to behave. You have to act this way. Don't embarrass me. I'm insecure. I'm shame-filled. I'm already like, people are looking at me like the divorced woman. And so you have like a two-year-old throwing a tantrum and maybe a secure woman would be like, yeah, that's kids. But an insecure woman who's been abused, who's in a really traumatic state is like, everyone's going to think I'm crazy. They're going to take my child from me. This is another thing I'm going to lose. And so it was dark. And I remember calling my mom. Oh, I get a little emotional. I'm a little emotional about this. I've never really talked about this journey. I'm so glad that you're asking these questions. But I remember calling my mom and saying, I think I need you to take her. Summer's coming up. She loves you guys. My parents lived in a different state. I think it's kind of time to what's now called grandparents camp. But then it was like, please help me before I implode. I remember calling her and I just said, I don't want to damage her. And I think I need some space. And I know that that's not a possibility for everyone. But for me, just thank God, like I had parents that were like, oh, we're on the next plane, you know? And it was a divine blessing. I just don't know if I would have made it through those summer months without just having a little breather. And then she came back and I was like, oh, okay. Hey, what's up? I'm your mom. You know, like I'm getting through it. And just to those who need to hear this again. And then it was like the healing journey began again, you know? Then it was like, I got a little stability, but it's like, also we're still in the valley and we're going to be in the valley for now that I look back 2 to 3 years. Yeah. And that was hard. That was hard.
I love that you asked for help. You know, I think one of the things last week or a couple of weeks ago, I told you that we talked to Dr. Williams, who's a therapist who really is like just an expert in anxiety. Yeah. And the theme that we kept hearing is ask for help, ask for help, ask for help. And I think even with women, even like you said, an insecure, maybe a secure mom would have said, oh, it's just a temper tantrum. I don't even think that's true, because I think all of us, mm-hmm. however our kids act, how old they are, their grades, how good they are at sports, if they're throwing a tantrum, whatever, we automatically assume that it is us. And even like our kid, I was talking to Dr. Williams, like when our kid expresses anxiety or whatever, we don't want to ask for help, because we would never want anyone to think that the reason they have anxiety or that they're stressing about things is because we aren't a good enough parent to save them from that. And so we don't ask for help. And so we stay isolated and we just chip away at trying to figure it out on our own. And so thank you. I hope those who are listening, who are in whatever season, even if it's not their parents, could ask a friend to say, hey, at this time, this is the witching hour for me, and I'm a single mom and I'm by myself. And from 4 to 6, can you just like on Thursdays, just take my kids for me? And most people would be so grateful that you asked, you know?
Oh yes. You're so right. That's the thing. It's like, and that's the thing with shame. It convinces us that we are alone and that no one's coming to save us and they don't see us. And it's just not true. I mean, God, I am surprised still now at people who call to check in. Hey, do you need a weekend? Is everything okay? Because of just the weightiness of our careers and what we do in ministry and just how we're trying to process through everything with our daughter. And it's just a beautiful thing that people really do care.
They do. They do. Yeah. I love it. Well, thank you for sharing that. I'm sorry. I hope that wasn't too vulnerable for you to share, but I love that. And I think one of the things that I love about your story is that you use kind of the pain and the suffering and where you were to start Broken Crayon Still Color. And I want you to talk about that, because I want people to hear so clearly that you're past does not define you. And that I read something, a friend of mine wrote me the other day that said, you know, your struggle right now, you sharing that could be someone else's lifeline, like you going through that. And I feel like that's what you've done. You were in this space and now you've started this, you know, organization called Broken Crayon Still Color, which is the cutest tagline. Can you explain why you started that and what that is?
Yeah. I mean, it's exactly what you said. It's interesting because the grief cycle first many, many years, decades probably even had these 5 steps. You know, it was like denial and anger and sadness and bargaining and all these things. And then somewhere along the way, someone created kind of this 6th like cleft, if you will, out of the grief cycle. So it's kind of like on the side of the 5 cyclical stages of grief. And it's a life of meaning and purpose. Mm-hmm. And so one of the ways to get out of a cycle of grief is to find meaning and purpose with that grief. Mm. And Sheryl Sandberg talks about that. One of the head corporate people over at Facebook, she went through grief. She lost her husband suddenly. And she talks about that, figuring out how do we actually take all of that pain that we've been through and from a healthy place, lead out and help other people. And that was Broken Crayons. It took me many years to actually form it into an organization, because the Broken Crayon Still Color tagline came when I was in the middle of the healing journey. And I just didn't feel the yes from God to officially start it.
Sure.
And then I got anxious and I was like, I got to start this thing. This is my story. And all these people are telling me, you got to do this. Tony, you're preaching about it. You're teaching about it. Like, you got to do this. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to start it. And a month later, God was like, I hadn't released you yet. You've got some healing to do. Mm. And literally within the 6 months that he shut it down after I announced it, which was so embarrassing. I'm an achiever. I want to look good. I went through some intense EMDR trauma treatment mm-hmm. that I didn't even know I really needed, and came out on the other side and started the organization. And I don't do it alone. And just make no mistake, the yes from God included other women. So we have a team of 7, and we all have different stories, because I just believe that one story is not powerful enough to change a whole narrative. But when you start to look at all of these different women with all of these different stories and circumstances, from divorced and single to married to single young college girls, and they're all screaming at the top of their lung, no, really, Broken Crayons really do, like, they do still color.
Yeah.
And brokenness doesn't define me. that's where the power comes in. And so that's what we do. We try to uplift women's voices who have been through really hard things, come out on the other side, are hope-filled and healing. And we use that to remind other women that, yeah, you're in a valley right now, sis, and you're probably going to be in that thing for a long time.
Yeah.
Okay. You're going to be right about that. But when you get out on the other side, there's a space for you to also shout from the rooftops for other women coming along the way that broken crayon still color. So, yeah.
I love that. One of the quotes that you say is, nothing we have done, no matter how devastating or devious, can push us too far out of his love to reach us, rescue us, and restore us. And the two things that I took out of there is, nothing we have done, no matter how devastating or devious. So something that we could have done to someone else, or the broken spaces could be what someone has wounded us. So it's both and, right? Like, some 100%. Of us, you know, feel like, oh, well, someone wounded us. That feels, that doesn't feel like, when I do that and when I wound someone else, that's feels maybe harder to come out of, or that feels like, oh, I could never be forgiven. I could never be restored because I chose to do that. Can you talk a little bit to the woman who might feel that?
100%. And here's what we have to realize too. And I had to realize really early on. I mean, I made a ton of really crazy decisions in my life. So I'm kind of, I get to hold both. I lost my virginity at 13. I did drugs and smoke and drank and all the things and partied until that kingdom come. I have friends now from college that are just like, honestly, I'm just surprised, not that you're saved, not that you have this organization, but that you're actually nice now. I'm like, okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, way to be real there. It's this tension of, how can I honestly forgive someone that hurt me? And one of the roots of that is being able to forgive yourself. Having the power to understand that you're worthy of forgiveness helps to get you into a posture of being able to forgive someone else. And there's just this beautiful dance of knowing that we are all legitimately broken. You yourself and the person that broke you, right? And there isn't this pain comparison trap. We talk about that all the time in our ministry. It's, well, I mean, we got to kind of compare pain on a pendulum. We got to get to a place where we stop doing that, so that pain is not about this competition, or it's not too big for us to heal from. And so
talk a little bit about that comparison, like, oh, my pain's too big, or my pain's not as big, so it's not, does it matter? Tell me, because I hear that all the time.
I hear all the time. We have women in our group that are getting a divorce because they've experienced infidelity. And we have women in our course groups that are getting a divorce because they were the one that actually committed the infidelity. And so what we try to do is, we try to remind women, and it always starts off with this. It's like, well, I don't really have that kind of story. Like, I mean, I'm almost feel a little embarrassed sharing this because it's not that bad. Like, or it's the opposite. Or at the end of the day, it's shame. Like, can we just call it for what it is? It's shame on either end. And we've heard this quote before. You know, guilt says I've done something bad. Shame says I am bad. We have to try our best to keep shame away from our identity. And the truth is, it takes, Kurt Thompson says this all the time, incredible counselor. He says this, he says that, you know, shame takes about 2 to 3 seconds to impact our neural pathways. Joy and acceptance takes about 20 to 30 seconds, meaning it's 3 times the amount of energy and intentionality that it takes to actually experience good emotions of being free and able to, as we said earlier, reach out for help and say, I don't have this on my own, and I am imperfect and wired for struggle, but I'm also still worthy of love and belonging.
Yeah.
That's a deeply rooted security that we have to develop so that we don't fall into that pain comparison trap.
Did you know that Lunchbox Notes are very dear to our heart? It's basically why our company was inspired, and our podcast and our children's book all inspired off of a Lunchbox Note that my husband wrote my son that said, be strong, protect the weak, love everyone. So we love Lunchbox Notes. So let me tell you a little bit about something that Christian parenting has for you. They have 50 different encouraging cards to put in your kids' lunches or backpacks. That's 50 cards of positive reinforcement. There's 50 Bible verses and 50 different ways to tell your kids that you love and you care about him. There's also a set of blank cards for you to write your own special messages of encouragement. So you can grab these noteworthy kids card set at cpgive.org. You go to cpgive.org. Copies are going fast, so make sure you get yours soon. Is there steps that you took on your journey? Like, okay, so if I'm hearing this and I'm thinking, I cannot forgive myself or I cannot forgive this person, or what are those things that started that for you? Like those tangible things. Did you wake up in the morning? Did you pray? Did you like I want to know, like, what are the things that started getting you in that habit to forgive yourself, to forgive others? What did that look like?
Yeah, first and foremost, you cannot heal in the environment or in the relationship of the place that broke you in the first place. I had to transition out of the places that were breaking me. I had a lot of church hurt, spiritual manipulation and abuse from a pastor. And I wanted nothing more than to just go to church and be with my community, but I literally could not. So one of the things I had to do was put some space and find a new safe church. And that meant starting all over and finding a new community and figuring out what it looked like to go to a church and no one knew my name for a little while, you know? And so I think it's about proximity. That was like my first step, is like figuring out how can I get in a safe environment with safe friendships so that I can actually have the chance to heal. The second thing that was really important for me was awareness of my own baggage. There was a reason why I kept getting in abusive situations. That does not belittle or take away from the abuse that was done to me. It does not let anyone off the hook, but it does say, hey, sweet girl, maybe, just maybe, looking at your childhood and seeing that you grew up with a verbally abusive father, I don't know, maybe this is why you're so attracted to this. That's on me, okay? Yeah. I've got to know what it is that I flock to that's toxic. So awareness was really big for me. The third thing was really touching on insecurity. I went through a whole course by Beth Moore. It's called So Long Insecurity, You've Been a Bad Friend to Us. We underestimate the power of insecurity, truly. It can make us do some pretty messed up stuff. Let me just tell you, okay, it can make you ghost follow somebody on Instagram that you just should have no business. It can make you say things and think things. Like, not feeling worthy, man, you just cut yourself short in so many areas. And so I had to work on that inner being. And I would say the fourth thing was I went on a spiritual encounter. I had been in a church where I served probably and surrendered to the pastor more than I did my Savior. That's just the truth. I did not have a personal relationship with God, but I was an ordained minister. I was preaching and teaching, doing my thing. And Sunday mornings were probably the most encounter and relationship time I had with God. And it was simply because I had developed, a childish, kind of immature, codependent faith. And I had to change that. And I created consistencies in that, journal times, all the things. We have like a little activity that we do with our course women. It's called 741. It's 7 minutes a day, 4 days a week, one day of reflection, where it's like, no, seriously, like, really kind of like spend some time with God, like for real.
Yeah. Okay.
Sundays is not enough. Okay. And so it was a whole just transformation. And of course, the fifth thing would be counseling. I mean, let's just like, it is what it is. It's oxygen to our souls. Like, let's just not be, I don't know. We just, it's go to counseling. You just, right. We got to go.
Just go. Yeah. Just go. I started this year for the first time. And yeah, it's been a breath of fresh air. It's crazy. And, you know, I love God gave us those persons, you know, and I think from the faith community, we have this. I was a pastor's kid and grew up in the church, and my identity was very much in what I did for the Lord, you know, all those things. And I think we have this thing that if we're dealing with anxiety or depression or whatever, the church has not done a great job of saying, hey, yeah, go get a counselor. It's like, where's your faith? Why aren't you praying?
Quote a scripture. Throw a scripture on it.
Throw a scripture. So here's a pillow that I crocheted for you. And, you know, like blessings. So we laugh all the time, you know, and I think we're coming out of that. Like, I think we're we're becoming healthier in that, to say God has placed people in our lives, counselors, therapists, who actually are like lovers of Jesus, who also know how to take us through stuff. So I think that's come – I feel like I've seen that more than when I was a little bit younger. But I remember kind of sharing a little bit of our journey, and someone very close to me was like, do you want to like say that you're going to counseling like in public? And I'm like, yeah, I do actually. I do, because I want to give someone else the same permission to be able to do that. So I love that. I want to transition just a little bit into the parenting hat. Okay, so we have these kids who are in our families. We're responsible for them, and we're all broken people. And so I want to ask, how much of your brokenness do you feel like is appropriate to share with your children? And how do we also come alongside in a healthy way when our kids face brokenness? Because they all will in some way or another.
Yeah. So that, there's layers to that. One of the resources that I lean really heavily on is the Parent Q resources. It's just absolutely amazing. What I love about it is obviously it's faith-based, love that. But also it breaks down children's ability to process information by phases. So they do grades. They have these little phase guides. They're from, I think, 0, okay, preschool, first grade, second grade, all the way up to 12th grade. And it's just these little these little snippets that say, this is their mental capacity. This is their emotional capacity. This is what they're probably going to be experiencing. This is how they're going to process it. With that information, I can start to posture the way that I talk about brokenness according to the phase that my kid is in. So, and they have this beautiful arc that talks about preschool, elementary, that's like the awe and wonder phase. So it's all about, wow, that's amazing. In middle school, they're talking about this idea of discovery, and we see it. I mean, middle schoolers, they go from I want to be a cheerleader to I'm straight gothic this week. Okay, well, we are switching it up. And then in high school, they enter into this change phase where they want to be change agents to actually activate their identity and who they are. With all that being said, it has informed the way that I talk to my daughter about brokenness according to the phase that she's in. Right now, she's 7, and she has been now awakened to this idea of I'm going to be embarrassed. My daughter's never talked about embarrassment until this year. Honestly, for a while there, I was like, Lord, I wish that you would be a little embarrassed, because you just, you lit somebody's elbow a second ago and you ate some grass. I mean, we need some parameters here. Okay. But now she's entering into this phase of, if I do this, I'm going to be embarrassed. Someone's going to make fun of me. And they're not necessarily taught that, but their environment goes from that. And so now I really try to pay attention to the phase that my daughter is in so that I can be sure to talk to her about brokenness on a level that makes sense to her. And I lean on resources. I Google, research, blog, every type of thing. There's an organization called There's a kid's book about divorce. I'm like, all right, let me read it first. Make sure we're good here. This is age appropriate. Process through that. And then I figure out language for it. And obviously, if you're going to talk to your kids about brokenness, please let it be from a healthy place. Heal first, or be on a healing journey first. That was super important, because I remember her dad in moments where talked about some things, our marriage, how we broke up, all the things, from a really unhealthy place. And it kind of shocked her a little bit. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to have to reinforce how we do this from a healthy place, how we celebrate no matter what, how we forgive. And so that's super important to differentiate.
I love that you said, finding out kind of where they are, and what you said from a healthy place, from those who come from broken families, it would be very easy to talk about the other, all those different things, and how that cannot be the most healthy thing when, your kid is growing up. And I heard from, I can't remember where I read it, but just when your kids feel everything else can be going around them, just blowing up, even during the pandemic. And it just feels like the outside world is just but if your home, whatever unit home is to you, feels safe and they feel known and loved in that space, then they're good to go. And I remember asking my son, we had just moved to Waco. He had no friend. Like, it was brand new pandemic. We'd moved during the pandemic. Don't ever do that. I mean, it was just like, I felt like he was going to be this anxious, because I was feeling it for him. Like, I was so nervous for him. And I remember him writing in school like the first week, and it said, how do you feel? It was like, how do you feel? And he said, I feel safe and known. And I was like, wait, what? And he's safe. And I said, oh, and everything else was, there was chaos, but in our home, there was safety and he could be himself. And I think that's where we have to figure it out as parents. Like, we don't have control of all the other crazy,
not at all.
But we do have control of that.
Well, I love one of the things that you said that I just want to like reiterate here. A question was asked. I think as parents, the best thing that we can do is be better question askers. Like, if I mean, that's one, and it's hard for me. I have like a really alpha aggressive personality. I'm a lecturer. I'm one of those parent lecturers that I said I would never be, you know? And I just want to spend more time asking questions.
That's good.
When my daughter's being disciplined, when there's a behavior blip in school, whatever it is, when we're processing through something hard, I just honestly try to do my best to ask questions to see where she's at, to kind of go on a journey with her. And I just, it's beautiful. I mean, you didn't know that, but a question was asked and it was revealed to you. And it's like, okay, now I know how to interface with him about this.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
And what you just said, the questions, I mean, like, how was your day? Great. Like, asking those even more pointed questions. How was your day? 1 to 10. You know, we found out that my kid was being bullied at school for months. He was just like, it was fine. It was fine. It was fine. When I finally did that question, 1 to 10, and he was like, yeah, my day was a 2. I'm like, oh, that doesn't sound, that doesn't sound fine. Why was it a 2? You know, and then kind of, because he's just not one to say the thing, So yeah, I think the question, I just have to sit on my hands sometimes because I am you, I'm the lecture parent, I know all the things. And if they would just listen to me, their world would be so much easier.
You're so smart.
But my little girl's like, I don't want to hear that. I just want you to, and the same with me. I don't want to hear how you're going to fix it for me. I literally just want you to say that really sucks. And I'm really, I'm just really like sorry.
All the men maybe listening in.
Right. Exactly.
Nice.
Exactly. Okay. So I want to ask you two last questions. One is, you have a book coming out. Are you allowed to talk about that yet or not?
Why not? I don't know. I haven't asked, but I'm down.
Let's do it.
Right now, this is our moment. Okay. So I got a book with Nelson Books. So excited about it. It's my first kind of big book, I guess you can call it. It's a big book and it's called Brave Enough to Be Broken. And it's up the subline is how to embrace your pain and discover hope and healing. And I'm still like getting used to it. I have to like remember all this stuff. This is the first time I've said it publicly. But I'm very, very excited about it. I'm very excited. And it's this beautiful mixture of a sandwich of story. And then the meat is really practical. That was one of the things that I just vowed to myself, is that I wouldn't write a book that was all about Tony, that people wouldn't open it up and just get to know all my little life. But instead, they would be able to get a glimpse into some of the pain that I've experienced, but understand how their story can be healed and redeemed by pressing into pain and finding hope and healing. So it's wild. I can't believe it. Fall 2022, y'all. Okay.
That's so exciting.
It's amazing. And our women's ministry is coming out with resources as well sooner than that. So we came out with a book on anxiety and abuse called Overcomer. And for Easter 2022, we have a book on depression and it's a 30-day devo all around. It's called Closer and it's just surviving depression when joy seems far. And so excited about it.
That's so, I mean, I feel like I could have you on here for another couple hours because I think that so many of us are feeling that we've never felt it before. And so it couldn't come at a better time. Okay, so at the end of our podcast, I kind of follow up with this Be Love quick tip. And I am going to put you on the spot because I kind of just take a cliff note version of everything that we just talked about and what inspired us and what is the one tangible thing, because I want people to walk away with a step or a piece that they can do this week that's like, ooh, okay, I can do this this week. This is not that hard. Because when we think of like hope in the midst of pain, and that feels overwhelming, that can feel overwhelming, yeah. right? But if we just take that one next step, what would yeah. you say that would be? What would that kind of Be Love quick yeah. tip, if they could do anything this week to be on this yeah. journey of healing, what would they do?
That's really, really good. Affirmations were life-changing for me, daily affirmations. But more specifically, as I was healing my childhood wounds while raising my child, I knew that I would leak, and I knew that my daughter would experience some of the things that I probably did. And so I actually have started, well, we're about 3 years in the game now, saying affirmations to my daughter that I needed to hear when I was a little girl. There was another layer to it. We did the psychotherapy. It was nuts. Like, my counselor essentially said, we want you to like hold something in your hand that reminds you of you, your childhood. That was a really good memory while you say these affirmations to your child. But it has radically rewired some of my neuro pathways.
Totally.
Affirmations. And it's so easy. We just get up. I have to remind myself, because it is what it is. Your girl can't remember everything. So I have a daily reminder, and it just says, affirm Dylan. And it's just, you are smart. You are kind. You are good. You are beautiful inside and out. You are loved by God, loved by Jesus, and loved by your family. And every single day, we say those every day. And it heals something in her and something in me too.
I love that. We have a friend of mine made this little laminate, because she's very crafty and I am not. And it's this little laminate card that has that. And she has two girls. And so I have one for Carter May, and she puts it on her mirror. And I mean, I don't know if she, you know, reads it every time, but it's very similar to that. And I'm reading a book right now about neuroscience and how we really can change those pathways. We can start to change the neuroplasty. I mean, it's all this, like, I'm reading this, I'm like, this is way too.
Neuroplasticity gets a little bit more welcoming to your things. I know.
It's unbelievable. So I'm like, our brain is so fascinating. But, you know, I don't want to get into the whole, like, toxic positivity, like you can change everything and you can do this and you, because I know that there's, I mean, we will work with very vulnerable like communities where they can't change some of the things that they're in right now. However, the hope that I've been getting from even working with those communities and seeing how our brain can be, you know, just rewired, is telling the kids that I even work with, like, every day, you are special. You know, you are worthy. You are loved. You are this. And just beautiful. Just that little piece of, you know, hearing that. And I know it takes a long time for that to become a belief, but over and over and over again. So I love that. So I think that's such a neat thing, and something that our listeners can do. And I'll even put on there just a little thing that they can print off and put on their own mirror.
I love it.
We need one for mamas too.
That's right.
We need one for mamas too. Well, Tony, thank you so much. Is there any way that for those who are listening, if they want to get a part of the Broken Crayon Still Color, if they want to be a part of that group, what would be their first step to do?
Yeah, I would say if you have a Facebook, we have such a beautiful Facebook community of about 3,000 women. It's just called the Broken Crayons Collective. We're praying fervently in there. We are sharing vulnerabilities. It's just a beautiful, beautiful space that honestly we like created, but the women inside of it, they run it essentially. Like, they are their own community, and it's just a really beautiful thing. So I would say the Broken Crayons Collective. And then all things Broken Crayons, we have the site and the Instagram and all those things. And we have some really fun stuff coming up, and we're always posting and announcing, and here's our new devotional, we're doing a conference, all the things. But that group really is like, it's like the heartbeat. It's the heartbeat of what we do. So yeah.
I love it. I'll post all those in our show notes. Thank you so much for being with us today.